And if you've heard that music, it means one thing. It means you've downloaded or streaming the Film Reel cast. And thank you very much. I'm Stuart, your host. It's glad to be back. And I'm back with Neil. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm very well, mate. Very well. Always good to be here and speak to you.
Lovely to hear your voice. It was only the other day that we were speaking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And what an amazing episode. If you haven't heard that, it's available on our YouTube site and obviously probably the podcast below this as well. So episode 4, what an amazing episode. 2 episodes left. I could talk about that. I'm sure you could for the next hour and a half.
Easily. It was so good.
So it's incredible. But we are talking about, because we've done it backwards, we're talking about the kind of the final one, but it's the first one. It's 1998, I do believe.
It is.
Rush Hour. Again, Brett Ratner, you've got the continuity, and Ross Lamana. So, again, writers. So, you've got the same team there. To be honest, as I said, when we'd done the last one, I did say, which was the last one being the middle one, that I was a bit kind of fatigued with Rush Hour, and you get the formula so quick. And this one was, I'm going to play my hands early, for me this is the worst one.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's fatigue, but I've got a few problems with this. I watched it just before we're doing this podcast now, just to make some notes and everything, even though I've seen it so many times. But yeah, I just kind of, I was suffering with this one, and I don't know if it's because I've just seen so many and I've watched like Rush Hour 3 times every week of a different film, and it's been hard going. But I mean, the budget of this, go for it. Sorry.
No, it's just doing it backwards. I think is, though it's unique in the way we've done it, but I think it's also the wrong thing to do, if you see what I mean, because you love the third one. Weren't particularly enamoured with the second, and you're saying that this is the worst, whereas I'd say it's the opposite way around.
So I'd say the, for me, number 2 is the best one.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I think number 2 by far, because it's got the best baddies in it, and that's what I think makes a film, when you've got someone so outstanding as Jackie Chan, and Chris Tucker for the comedy value, but he's the same in all of these. But I think you need a good foe to put them up against. And number 2, because it was martial arts, and the stunts are all martial arts based. Yeah. And I think it works best. In this one, had the worst baddie in completely. It's hard to pick an actual baddie, because Sang doesn't really do, I don't think he does any karate in it.
No, he does a lot of running, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He does.
He runs away a lot. Running.
Yeah, and you've got Junto, who's 70, who they don't realise he's a baddie, and everyone realises it else within the first 3 minutes of this film.
Oh, it's so obvious, isn't it?
And he doesn't do any karate. So for me, there's...
he can't get his leg up above his knee.
I think the baddie in this is the threat of something happening to the girl.
Yeah.
So Soo Young, that's where the baddie is. There isn't a physical baddie for me, and I think that's what lets it down. But we're kind of
getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we?
Even we're doing this arse about face. So
it's what we do.
Exactly. We never said we're professional, but in the synopsis, be it very brief, it says cultures clash and tempers flares as two cops named Detective Inspector Lee, the Hong Kong detective, and Detective James Carter, says FBI, but he's LAPD, fake promotion to the FBI, a big mouth, work alone Los Angeles cop, who from different worlds discover one thing in common, they just can't stand each other. And they're running out of time, they need to catch the baddie. You've got Soo Young, who's been held hostage, they need to find out who the baddie is, who the master criminal is, the mastermind behind it, before she's dead and the bomb detonates. That is the plot. It's very simple. You could almost take the plot from the second one, and it felt very similar.
They're all similar, though, aren't they? They found something that worked, and they ran with it. And I think that's what the Rush Hour series is.
Yeah.
In essence.
Yeah, because the end of this one it's in the exhibition centre. A nice big kind of computer game platform for them to reach level by level to get the baddie.
Yeah.
In the second one, the casino, exactly the same. It even goes level by level to get the baddie. So, and the Eiffel Tower.
And then the third one, Eiffel Tower, which has many levels.
Exactly, yeah. So it's spot on the same formula. And
yeah.
I thought more so than any other one that Chris Tucker was, I felt that he was really trying to be Axel Foley in this.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
So I don't know. I just, in this one, he seemed to kind of be more confident with the Carter character in the second and third one and kind of take it in a different direction, which was fantastic because it does make me laugh. In this one, he makes me laugh. But I just thought it was a lot of Axel Foley to him. But as the previous ones, you've got Jackie Chan plays Inspector Lee. Chris Tucker plays Carter. You've got Tom Wilkinson plays Griffin, the British councillor, or
John Tao.
John Tao. And Chris Penn plays Clive. I like Chris Penn. He's a good guy.
Yeah, no, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a shame what happened to him. But, yeah, he's very good. Reservoir Dogs is freaking awesome as well. So
definitely.
I do like him in that. But, yeah, so the budget for this one was $33 million. Mm-hmm. Opening weekend, $33 million. In the US, it grossed 141. Worldwide, 244. So this...
Blimey.
It's a huge success.
That's the thing. I think it's because it was original. I can't think of another film like it before it. I don't know if you can, but I was racking my brains thinking, did they do something similar to this prior to it coming out?
And what, as in two different styles kind of thing? Like?
Yeah, two different styles meeting each other. Like that, you've got the obviously martial arts genius, true professional, and then obviously Chris Tucker's character, which is just a fly by the seat of your pants type of guy, meeting together in this sort of comedy cop, buddy cop homage. I can't think of anything, and I think that's probably why it did so well.
No, I can't really think of anything like this. I mean, where you've got two different styles. I mean, you've got Shanghai Noon, where you've got, again, that's Jackie Chan, and I think that's Owen Wilson, where you've got a cowboy and a martial arts expert, but that was a terrible...
I suppose, yeah.
But as in a big franchise, I don't think there's anything else like this. I mean, if you do know, we're at the Film Reel Cast on Twitter, just let us know.
Definitely.
Because I'd love to know what we're missing out on. Not that I'd want to watch another franchise similar to this, but... you never know. But, I mean, the film, you kind of... All the other ones started off with a big explosion, a massive bang, didn't they? And this one kind of doesn't. It's at a dockyard and you meet Sang and they're smuggling the artifacts. And before we've seen them do that, where they've been full of fake money. And that's it, really. And he gets away and then he goes to the British Council where they're handing over, the British are handing over to Hong Kong, which actually obviously happened.
What? And I just very quickly, in this boat scene, I have to admit, the DVD copy of this film I have, unfortunately, I couldn't understand anything that was going on.
Oh, really?
If it wasn't in English, because it didn't have any subtitles. And then I thought, I'll have a look at the subtitles menu. And I thought, English subtitles, brilliant. I turned it on. So then it subtitled absolutely everything. But when anyone was talking Mandarin, it just came up with, speaking Chinese or shouting Chinese, so I was none the wiser to what they actually said.
That is the best subtitles.
Honestly, I was like, yes, I've cracked it. And then speaking Chinese, that really fucking helps, thanks very much. So
you can imagine the geezers doing the DVD, what do we put in there? Just put in their language, fuck it, doesn't make a difference.
Literally didn't even have the Chinese language, just the English words, speaking Chinese. I have no actual idea what they were talking about.
Well, when they're on the boat, he goes through the kind of the vent on the boat.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm in permission, position, don't move. And he goes, where's Jun Tao? And he says, Jun Tao is everywhere. And then he kind of says, you want a piece of me? You're not going to shoot, which obviously doesn't shoot, because Jackie Chan never shoots anyone.
No, he doesn't. Why, well, he has a gun at all.
Yeah, and then he gets away. And that is pretty much it. So you didn't miss anything, to be honest. So you should be at peace there.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because I was sitting there going, I probably missed a very big plot hole. when I was first started watching this, because I had no idea.
No. Best love titles ever.
Ah, brilliant.
But yeah, as I say, it goes to the handing over from the like the British consulate over to the Hong Kong, and that's where you see Inspector Lee speak to Han, who's the Hong Kong ambassador, and he says to him that we've recovered loads of ancient artifacts. He goes, "What a great day it is!" And you see the look on Griffin's face of pure anger, and he may as well be sitting there with a t-shirt saying, "I'm the baddie, everyone."
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, a little sign, you know, just sticking out of his back, just going, "I'm the bad guy, everyone. I'm the typical British bad guy that is in every one of these films." Yeah, definitely.
It's weird because I always wonder when they watch these films, and I know these films aren't kind of for like the boffins, like the Einsteins and things like that.
No.
But when they do go and watch them again, and obviously this one, you've got the baddie. Well, he's like, baddie, he doesn't really do a lot. Tom Wilkinson.
Yeah.
And in the second one, where you had the baddie Ricky Tan at John Lone, at least, even though it wasn't done very well, at least it was kind of faked his death. And you kind of might have believed that there was someone else who was kind of like the top man, the kingpin. Because they did it again with Vax Mon Sydow. It was Reinhard in number three. And again, yeah, he came in as like the friend, the backup, the support. And you knew he's Ming the Merciless. He's never going to be a good guy.
No, he can't play a good guy. It's impossible.
Exactly.
He's Ming the Merciless. He's just pretending to be somebody else. He's like, "Oh, fuck, that didn't work. Couldn't be Gold Flash, so I'll be someone else."
But you've got Jun Tao, who is like a man of mystery, a face of faces, that he is everywhere. So you think that he's kind of, it's like, what's that guy from Fight Club, where he's everyone? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Tyler Durden, that's his name.
Right.
So he's that kind of figure where he's everyone. And you obviously, it's clear to the viewer that Jun Tao Griffin is the main baddie out of this.
Yeah.
And again, they love to lay foreshadow on this. And you wouldn't have seen this because obviously you don't get subtitles.
No.
But when he goes out, you see Soo Young, and Jackie Chan's talking to Soo Young. And he says, "I'm going to miss you when I go to America." And Jackie Chan says, "You'll have a really, really good time. Everyone in America is really friendly." And that, which is a strange thing to say to a child. And he gives her the necklace, which obviously comes into play a bit later on. Yeah, so that's when they're chatting. But it goes to Chris Tucker, who's meeting Clive. What a name to call a baddie. Clive.
Yeah, Clive. And
Chris Penn. And he's going to go and buy some dynamite. I love this scene. I think Chris Tucker is just so naturally electric, full of energy. And it's buying the C4 from the boot of the car is so funny.
It's like, "You're late." Like, "No, I'm not late. You're late. You're early. I was in the diner." It's like, oh, he's just, you know, constant bullshit, isn't he? It's brilliant.
They nail it, don't they? They really know how to do it so well. And
yeah.
The bullshit comes out of Chris Tucker's mouth. It flows just naturally. And he's just so good at it, honestly.
What a place, though, to sell C4.
I know, it's really weird. You're going to do it in a public car park.
Yeah, not in the middle of nowhere. There's plenty of places in America which I'm sure are in the middle of buttfuck nowhere where you could, you know, meet and no one would bat an eyelid. But you're doing it outside of a cafe, which, funnily enough, two coppers turn up because you know they frequent these places quite regular, so the films make us believe, don't they? So
yeah, it's just, it's nonsense. And you'd think if there was a massive sting operation going on, they'd let people know to stay out the area.
Yeah.
And again, they've got two incompetent police officers, but it's quite funny because obviously he tells them to kind of foxtrot Oscar. Yeah. And one of them gets shot in the hand, the other one gets shot. But they're both okay because it's that kind of film. And when Chris Tucker, we know from previous films like Die Hard, that putting pressure and shooting C4 won't make it explode. But it's quite funny when the car blows up, and it does blow up, and it's a really good stunt. It kind of flips over Dark Knight style. And the dance and the music of Chris Tucker, just even tonight watching it, just made me laugh. A bit of MJ came on, and it's just, he doesn't take anything serious whatsoever.
No, he doesn't care, does he? He's like, I've got the bad guy. Doesn't all that matters. I've blown up loads of stuff and caused untold carnage, and two cops have been shot, but I got them on my hand. It's fine.
Yeah, it's best fine. Job. Best job. It's just so, so good. And I think this is set, I think it's like 4 months, 6 months after the Jackie Chan, the handing over, isn't it? So Han's now in America, and he's with his daughter, Soo Young. And normally, as James will tell you, I don't like children in films.
No.
They often get on my nerves. But I quite like her. And when she was singing Mariah Carey in the back of the car, I quite like that.
Oh, I couldn't stand it.
Not really. I just thought that is what kids do. They just don't care. And adults have to sit there and listen to them.
That's true. But when it's your own kid, it's not so bad. You can kind of... But no, sorry.
I sympathised. I really did. With the two bodyguards, they've got to sit there. They've got to listen and entertain her. And she knows that. And she's singing it.
Milking them off.
Oh, it's just... And you've got no choice whatsoever. That must be torture. And they're stuck in one of the biggest traffic jams going.
No. No thanks.
Not a fan.
Not
but it's
at all.
Followed by one of the tropes that you get in lots of films with the fake police officer. And it's really weird because... When there is no incident and they put fake police officers in who wave all the cars one way, then wave just your car the other way to set you up in a trap. Wouldn't you kind of think, why me? What's going on? What's wrong?
It's never maybe you would. There isn't every question, is it? But I guess maybe you think, oh, maybe it's now our turn. Like the other cars behind us are going to go that way. I don't know. I can see your point, though. Definitely.
Yeah. And they're the worst bodyguards ever. Because don't suss that something is wrong. Maybe they just want her kidnapped, that she's such a pain in the arse.
Yeah, I'll just shut there up. You take her. You deal with the singing. I'm not dealing with it anymore.
And they run into Sang, who you'd think, if there is threats on her life, that these bodyguards would know who these threats are, who the targets are, and what's to count for. Because I'm sure when there's like big events that you'll know, watch out for this person. These are all threats. Have a list of their names. Here's their photos. If you come across them, just watch out. But they seem like the most relaxed, chilled out bodyguards going, don't they? For some, it's quite a high target, I would have thought.
I suppose they think they've got the easy job. It's just taking the kid to school. It's, you know, I've got a part where they're singing for about 5 minutes or, you know, however long, and then I can get on the rest of my day and not have to worry about it until later. But
I see that. I mean, Sang comes up and just pops a bullet in both their heads. And takes her. And I have to say, I always find kind of scenes with kids being kidnapped quite distressing. And I know this is only Rush Hour, but it really kind of manhandles her. And it looks quite realistic, the way he's just grabbing her and pulling her out of the cars. Because there's been quite a few abductions lately. And it's quite full on. And I think when she escapes, I mean... And the motorbike comes out. It's such a good stunt. The way the guy on the motorbike, and it's all done in one scene, the way he can come along and just grab her and put her over the motorbike. It's really impressive.
Oh, no, they're very good effects, aren't they? The fact that they've been able to do that and stuff. Yeah, definitely. But no, it is always hard to see a child being kidnapped. And like you say, it is only Rush Hour. But if you're a father or a mother or anything, or, you know, have a close family, it's always hard because you're like, oh, no, you don't want them to get hurt, or you worry about what they're going to do to them and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just kind of like uncomfortable more than anything, isn't it? You think, God, knowing that happens, you think, bloody hell. But, I mean, she is kidnapped, and these do turn out to be the most patient kidnappers going, which did surprise me, seeing how ruthless they are. But Han wants to bring his own guy over.
Yes.
And you all know who that guy is, and it's obviously fucking Jack.
Bruce Lee.
Oh, the man, the Chan man. And I couldn't work out, you know, that Officer Johnson, that lady, she seemed to be a lady of many accents. She sounded a bit French. Then she sounded kind of like Puerto Rican. Then even American. I didn't know who she was trying to be, because at the start of it, when they're in the office, and she's saying, look, you should have waited for me. I was your backup on that sting op with the C4. And that's when you find out he works alone. But she's got a really weird accent. I don't know whether she's trying to put one on or whether she just got a strange accent, because I've never seen her before.
I don't know. Unfortunately, bless her, she died quite young.
Which is quite sad.
No, yeah, she died at age 55, I think. She had cancer, I believe. Obviously, if I'm wrong, I apologise. But when I looked, because I questioned, you know, when, you know, who she was. I believe I've seen her in things before, but I couldn't picture it.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I looked her up, and bless her, yeah, she passed away quite young. But yeah, I found she was quite a good actress in that. I quite enjoyed her in this.
Yeah, I've never seen her in anything else. That's probably, obviously, I wonder if it's before the, well, she was ill. She wasn't in the second one. She didn't feature at all.
No, no. I'm just trying to find her now, but carry on. I'll update you in a minute.
Yeah, so he gets assigned to, well, because they don't want Lee coming over, because the FBI, obviously, being egotistical idiots that they are, they have jurisdiction over everything. And I do like the scene where they ask for someone, just anyone, who can come over and distract Jackie Chan from coming over and carrying on the investigation. And the way the captain is like, this is disgusting, it's embarrassing, it's humiliating for everyone. And the fact that, and he changes his tune when he sees Chris Tucker, and he kind of really bigs him up. And Chris Tucker falls for his bullshit, hook, line and sinker, doesn't he?
I know you read the paper. They lying. You know I wouldn't do nothing like that. They over-exaggerate. You know how the paper is. They just want a story.
Two officers were shot. One man lost a pinky.
But didn't nobody die?
You destroyed half a city block.
That block was already messed up.
And you lost a lot of evidence.
We still got a little bit left.
What you did was dangerous and completely against policy. And not only that, you did a good job.
What?
Everyone around here is so image conscious. Everybody's so afraid of their own goddamn shadow. It's nice to meet an L.A. detective who's willing to lay it on the line.
Yeah, that's the same way I feel. That's what I've been trying to tell everybody.
See, ever so often, we have to let the general public know that we can still blow shit up.
You goddamn right. That's the only way I work, Cap.
Oh, it is. Yeah, definitely. FBI. You know, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's just, yeah, he's made over because he's like, oh, shit, because she's telling him, you're going to lose your job. You fucked up this time. You've gone too far. And he's like, oh, really? You've heard I'm going to lose my job?
Yeah.
And then really worried, and he goes into the cap going, hang on, let me explain. And we're going to promote you to the FBI.
Proper swagger, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. It's fantastic.
And then he turns up at the house again, giving it all the large FBI, and it's so funny. But I love always love it when the way people are portrayed when they're the FBI in any film, that they're always so macho, so serious. They've all got earpieces in, or they're wearing sunglasses, and it's just so funny. I don't know if the FBI really like that, but it's such a trope in all of these films. It just cracked me up.
Yeah. So just going back to that actress, she died in October of 2014 of psoriasis of the liver. Unfortunately, she had quite a bad alcohol problem, apparently. And that's when she died in 2014. So age 55, bless her.
That's crazy, isn't it?
She must have had some troubles going on for that. But I was quite shocked.
Yeah, so young for kind of those kind of issues and shit. Oh, bless her.
Yeah, she's been in. She was acted in 104. Well, she was credited 104 times. So she's been in. She'd been in lots of things.
All right.
So you probably have seen her. Yeah, potentially.
So so Tucker gets mugged off, and in the end, they can't keep feeding him bullshit, and he actually realizes, doesn't he, that he is getting mugged off, and this is a crap assignment, and he's just told to babysit Lee and keep him away from the investigation.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be fair, when he meets Jackie Chan for the first time, I don't know what you think, but he's not particularly nice to him, is he?
Oh, no. Well, he doesn't want this assignment, does he? He knows he's been mugged off. He knows it completely. He's, you know, he gets mugged off by his whole team on the phone, doesn't he? Because he calls up his boss and says, this is ridiculous, I'm not doing that. And, you know, and she says, doesn't she, oh, well, you have to have a partner now and all that type of stuff. Yeah. So he doesn't want it at all. He already has decided he doesn't like this guy at all. And the way he talks to him just shouts in his face in English. Doesn't even give him a chance to answer.
Yeah.
And I love the way he yaks Jackie Chan. Just like, well, I'm not going to say anything then. Just going to make you look like an absolute fool.
That's it. Yeah, you think I can't speak there. I'm not going to speak then. And that's it. So it's fucking fair dues. But so then they take him to the Chinese Theatre. I love the Chinese Theatre. I'd love to go there one day. But apparently it's meant to be like full of tramps and...
Really?
Like, fucking, yeah, proper fucking scumbags that and mime artists that really do hassle you, that you're just not meant to kind of give them money or anything. It's obviously in the films they picture it just full of tourists and quite a nice place, but yeah, it's meant to be different to that. But I mean, he leaves Chan kind of, he just wastes his time. And I do like the bit where Chan just starts to realise that his time's being wasted, so he does decide to run away. He's on the bus. And again, you've got that trope where the bus is full of Chinese tourists, all with cameras, wearing the same clothes. And it's just so, so funny. And when he climbs up the back and puts the gun to Chan,
yeah,
and he's standing there, then everyone starts taking pictures, and he fucking soaks it up so much, doesn't he? He
loves ego. It.
He starts posing, and it just gives Chan a chance to get away. And it's, but Chris Tucker's just so funny. He's so vain.
Oh, he's so vain, isn't he? He's just all about the image and being centre of attention. He absolutely loves it, doesn't he? Absolutely loves it.
It's just brilliant. And it's a really good way, the way Jackie Chan gets away. I mean, the way he just hangs onto that signpost and climbs through the roof of the one of those, what are they called? Winnebagos, are they?
Yeah.
It's just, he makes everything look so easy. I don't know whether it is that easy, whether he's just fearless. Obviously, he's got the dexterity to be able to do it, but... I think he's just got no fear and he just tries these things. It just makes it look so easy.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the way he's obviously trained his entire life is just set him up for it, and he'll give anything a go, won't he? They set up these stunts and he's generally, you know, in the outtakes and stuff you've seen in other films, it does go wrong, but he's willing to do it, isn't he? He's got, no fear, proper balls when it comes to that type of stuff.
And he obviously gets away. And again, you get the trope of how many people, if I was after someone, if I was in the police and I wanted to catch them and they got away, I wouldn't have a clue how to get someone's motorbike and do exactly what Chris Tucker does, where he wheel spins it and then jumps on the back of it.
Absolute bollocks, isn't it?
It is proper nonsense.
Yeah.
It really is. It makes no sense at all. I don't know why they chose to do that. They could have had such a good chase, but... Yeah, and do you not have to wear a helmet in America?
I don't think you do in certain states, from my very little knowledge. But you often see it, don't you, where they, like in Suns and stuff like that, they never wear helmets. Very few of them wore helmets and stuff. So I don't think it's a thing over there in many places.
No, it's just really strange. But, I mean, from this, you can kind of tell, even though there is an undertone of dislike towards each other, that... there is a kind of a slight bond starting to grow. And because we did it the wrong way around, the things that started to grow here and the seeds that were put in, like the cassette player when they played the Beach Boys and they played the music.
Yeah.
And it kind of was started off here. And I love the bond between these two. I know we did Lethal Weapon. And for me, that is the pinnacle of buddy cops for me.
Oh, definitely.
And you can't beat that. But these two... when they're on form and when they're doing a scene, which works so well when there's back and forth. No, not action, but just dialogue. I think it does work well.
No, I think so, definitely, because Chris Tucker's got that mouth on him, hasn't he? And he just, you know, like, never touch a black man's radio and all that sort of stuff, which then they use that joke the opposite way in two, saying never touch a Chinese man's CD when he throws the CD out the window and stuff like that. But Jackie's always got an answer. And he's very deadpan, isn't he, generally, with it? And it just really works really well because Tucker's right up there, isn't he? Just constantly almost screeching everything he says.
Yeah, and it must be hard not to get overshadowed by Chris Tucker.
Definitely.
They must have to kind of choose the line so well, because you learn in the outtakes that Jackie Chan has trouble saying words and his acting's not the best. And they do so many outtakes.
Oh, God,
it must be hard to... to rein someone in who ad-libs their lines so much.
Yeah, it must be extremely difficult for Jackie Chan, because he's probably expecting one line and then Tucker delivers something completely different.
Yeah.
You know.
And you see that from the outtakes, don't you, where a scene is shot in so many different ways, and most of the time Jackie Chan and most of the cast and crew are just pissing themselves laughing.
Yeah. I bet these were fun to work on. I bet they were hilarious.
Yeah. I bet anything like this where you haven't got the ego, where you've got someone like, even like, I don't know, the first like Axel Beverly Hills Cop, anything where you've got someone who is a stand-up naturally, like Chris Tucker and like Chris Rock as well. You've got those things, and these guys are so clever and so funny with one-liners. It must be so hard to keep a straight face. I always think the Blazing Saddles film is so stupid, and it must have been so much fun. Even the Carry On films, you know, they're just dopey films. The best films.
That piss take of Star Wars as well.
Spaceballs.
I bet that's freaking hilarious to be on the set of that. Those ridiculous outfits and the stupid jokes that they made. It must be really hard for the directors and stuff to rein them back in, saying, we've actually got a film to do here, guys, and you're just, you know, having your comedy prowess.
That's it, to stay in character when you've got loads of comedians, like the Monty Python films. Life of Brian must have been an unbelievable laugh.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's just so, so good. It really is. But we get like the birth of the scene with Don Cheadle in previously, where he goes to see him and they have like that karate kind of fight. I think that's the second one, isn't it? I think
he talks about
fake money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get this, he goes to see his cousin in a pool hall. And that's when they do drop the N-bomb. But Chris Tucker does it. And you often see that between black people in films in life.
You do.
But it seems Jackie Chan, they get away with it for the fact that he doesn't understand the culture and he's trying to fit in. And he learns, he can see the swagger that Chris Tucker's got. So he tries to copy that. And obviously he uses it and he drops it. There's never a good time, but especially when you drop it to someone who's about 6'7" tall and built like a brick shit house.
Yeah, no, it's true. Ouch.
Yeah.
And he realises his mistake, doesn't he?
Yeah.
After saying it twice.
And it did make me laugh because you can never really get away with this in any films unless it is like a Los Angeles kind of gangster film. But the comedy value is very clever, is the fact that Jackie Chan, who is so inoffensive to everyone, that says it unknowingly, which leads to a pretty good fight in the pool hall. And I just love seeing Jackie Chan fight, as I've said in all the other films. It's so easy for him to do it. And it's so amazing to watch of how he can do the splits on a fucking pool table and get his leg up so high. It's brilliant choreography. I wonder if he did his own choreography in this or whether he's advised, because he's so experienced.
They must have figured it out, and they probably practiced it over and over, haven't they? You can see it, you know, when they're swinging it and stuff like that. But it's quite funny because there's an outtake for this scene, isn't it, where he accidentally punches one of the pool cues in half.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? And he's like, oh, he even surprises himself with it.
But when he's swinging those pool cues around, it's so clever, so fast and so talented. It's just unbelievable. It really, really is. And again, I think that's why the second one was so good, because it was people who are probably of that ability fighting each other, so the choreography is so much quicker.
Oh, no, definitely. In the parlour and the massage parlour, very good scene for many reasons. But
yes.
That was fantastic, wasn't it? I like the fact that they even got Chris Tucker involved in that as well more. And you could tell that obviously it was very choreographed when they're doing all their moves together. But it was very well done. I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and there's a lot more fighting from Chris Tucker as the films kind of progress, isn't there? On the third one, as you say, that he does, especially on the fight in the Eiffel Tower, there's a lot more karate.
Definitely.
And it's actually, you do see kind of all of him doing it rather than a stuntman set into the choreography, which is, I think it's just great. But so he handcuffs Lee to his car because Lee is pissed off. was being mugged off about not actually carrying out an investigation. And I think it's great that he actually takes the steering wheel off his car and takes it to the embassy, and he uses it to take out the two guards on the gate. Again, thankfully, all of these guards are just idiots.
Muscle brain morons, aren't they? Well, not even muscle, they just think they're fucking the dog's nuts, and they really aren't.
No.
It's, you know, just telling him to piss off and stuff, and, you know, he's like, no, you know what, I'm not going to, I'll just kick your asses and climb the wall anyway, thanks very much.
It's so good, yeah, it's so clever, and I know there was outtakes, there's so many outtakes of this scene, isn't there?
Especially
in the house with a steering wheel. It's brilliant, it really is. It's like a Marvel film, you've got to watch it after the film's finished for the outtakes, because it's just so, so good. And he effortlessly climbs that wall, climbs that tree, and gets into the house, because he wants to speak to Hans and let him know that he's actually in America, and he wants to carry on the investigation to try and find Jun Tao and try and find Sang as well. And it's just brilliant. He effortlessly disarms everyone, and it's brilliant. It's so quick and it's easy, but you can tell by, especially the bald detective who's kind of in charge leading it. When Jackie Chan takes his belt off, it's almost as if he's standing there going, right, take the belt off, I do this, you do that.
Yeah,
really slow.
He is, yeah. He's obviously not used to that kind of stuff, is he?
No.
At all. But it was still very well done. There's some people that aren't they're just not made for that type of acting, are they?
No, not at all. Not at all. And when Chris Tucker turns up, that's when Sang calls. And he says,
this is brilliant.
He kind of, unlucky for him that Chris Tucker answers the phone. Yeah. And he's the worst person that you'd want to negotiate with any terrorist whatsoever when there's a pressure situation, isn't he?
Hello?
Am I speaking with FBI?
Give me the phone.
The FBI? Yeah, this is the FBI.
Carter.
You are FBI?
Yeah, this is the FBI.
If you want the girl back alive, listen and do not talk.
Okay, I'm listening. Let me get a pen. All right, cool.
The drop will be made tonight, 11 p.m. The amount will be $50
million. $50 million? And who do you think you kidnapped, Chelsea Clinton?
It's just like, he must have been shitting himself and sweating that, please don't talk because my daughter's going to die. What you want about? But Han appears to kind of think that Chris Tucker's the expert for some reason, and he gives him the pen and paper. But when he says take the ransom money, I think it's something like 50 million, because it goes up to 70 million, doesn't it, a bit later on. Where do they get this money from?
He say he wants to pay it himself? Because the consulate, he's like, oh, I've just paid the money. I'm sure he's the one that.
So I can't understand, where would he get it when it goes up to 70 million?
I don't know.
I mean, he's only a civil servant at the end of the day, isn't he? I mean, where would he get that much money from?
I have no idea. I have no idea, mate. And it's one of those films where it's best not to think about it, if you see what I mean. Cause...
That's pretty true. Yeah. But they go to do the drop-off, and when they get to the building, they send the SWAT team in, and Jackie Chan's outside. He can sense that something is wrong. And they go in the building, and the building's obviously cleared, and then it blows up. I couldn't understand the point of blowing the building up. I didn't get what he was getting from that. Why drop the ransom money off and then blow the building up and kill everyone? I don't know what he was trying to get. It didn't make any sense.
I think, to me, just the fact that he was showing how serious he was. So, you know, he let them trace the call. He let them come to where he was, or where he's supposed to be. And he's almost like, I've told you, follow what I'm trying to say. And because they haven't, he blew them up and the coppers inside, which is awful. But it's almost to say, don't fuck with me. I will kill people and I will kill his daughter. So,
do you think that's what it was? A show of muscle rather than anything else?
Yeah, I think so. It was a do not fuck with me. I am going to do it. And I've just killed a load of your lot to prove it.
Right. Yeah. I just don't know what to take from that. It's very strange. But he sees Sang, Jackie Chan sees Sang run away. And there is a foot chase. It's okay. And they go to an abandoned building and he chases him with an axe. it's just so weak for me for this guy to be like the main bad guy that they've got. That he doesn't offer any resistance. He just runs away all the time. He doesn't stand up and fight. I want to see him kick Jackie Chan's ass or kick Chris Tucker's ass, but mainly Chan's, and show that he's a real threat, because there's nothing, is there?
No, I think he's... I think you're right. Well, you're definitely right. I think he's a nasty piece of work, and he's willing to do whatever he can for the money, but he knows that Chan's got his number, because he's not a martial artist like he is. But it is a shame. You are right. There's no strong bad guy. The only strength he's got is the fact that he's willing to do anything for the money.
Yeah.
As in kill people.
Yeah. It's weird, because he looks like... You get the impression that when you get like Jet Li in Lethal Weapon 4, that he was like the henchman. And he was really... I mean, Jet Li was at his prime, was really good. And then he became the boss. And I expected this guy to be a Jet Li kind of character, that he was really dangerous. And then he'd take out Jun Tao and he'd become the face of Jun Tao and the boss.
Yeah.
But it never kind of went to that level, which I really wanted. I wanted that tension, which that lacks for me in this film, but it had it the second one.
Oh, no, definitely. You're right. It's weak. Like you say, the bad guys are the weak element, aren't they? The English guy, Tom Wilkinson, Griffin, is the bad guy. And Sang is basically just his lackey, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just the one running around doing all the dirty stuff so he doesn't have to get his hands dirty, and he can stay clean and innocent and be, you know, the character he is. But he is a crap bad guy. You're right.
Yeah, it's a shame. But they go from there, and thankfully the story fits in that Johnson, his partner, is training to be a bomb disposal expert. And thank God for that, because that may come in helpful later on.
Yeah, a bit foreshadowed there, maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? And he shows Johnson that device, and she knows it's some kind of a mechanism as part of a bomb. What part, I don't know, but she says it's like high tech, and it could be like the detonator or something like that. And then they go to see the man who knows about selling and buying C4. They go back and see Clive, go back and see Chris Penn.
I know. Of all the people to try and get information,
the guy you set up.
What a joke.
Nonsense.
Absolutely. And I completely agree.
He's a career criminal, and to deal in C4, you're going to be some kind of badass, and you're going to have no conscience because you're selling products that will ultimately kill people. And it was nonsense that, of course, he told Chris Tucker where to go. But when Jackie Chan shows him a picture of an 11-year-old of Sue Young and says, this girl's going to die, and suddenly it looks like he's going to cry, and he gets that conscience. And you think, no way would that happen. No. He would not get any conscience.
No, not so ever. He doesn't know this kid from Adam, does he? He doesn't know who she is. Who cares? From his point of view, why would he care if this unknown Chinese girl gets murdered? You know, he sold it potentially, according to what we're believed, he sold C4 to hundreds of people potentially before, killing God knows how many. So, yeah, I completely agree. He's not going to just turn around and go, yeah, you know what, here's everything. I'll just be everyone knows that I've just met two coppers in a prison. Yeah. You know, he's going to get absolutely bloody beaten and raped, isn't he? Because of
100%.
There's no way. No fucking way.
Yeah, and it did make me chuckle that he had a sudden conscience. It was just, never, ever, ever going to happen.
No.
But thankfully, he does tell them exactly where they're going to be when they sell the dynamite and everything else, where the bomb's going to be. And it leads to, again, a kind of a seed that's sown, where they play the war song and they start to dance. In a tacky, cheap, filthy way, I like this bit, because they do bond, and you see them getting closer, and it's just, they dance. I don't know why. This is where they get that stupid walk away and dance bit, which I don't get that. They must have made that up as they were just going along, you know. That can't have been put in there for them.
Yeah, that's a bit of ad lib, I'd imagine. But it was good. It was weird. When I watched it, you're almost cringing, aren't you, at it, going, oh, why is he doing this? It doesn't... But I suppose it is just to actually start really forming that relationship, so it's not just the girl. They've got an interest yeah. and stuff like that. But it was proper cringe.
Chan singing was funny. It really made me think of a karaoke scene. It was so good when he was singing War. And he's just so lovable, Jackie Chan. He's so innocent. And he's just a really great character.
Absolutely not. Say that again. You are. War. Who? Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely not.
You know, nobody know war.
Everybody knows war. Who? Yeah. What it is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Good God. You all.
It ain't you all, it's y'all.
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 He can't dance though for shit. It's hilarious.
No, he can't dance. Chris Tucker is an awesome dancer. He's so, so good.
Yeah, he's sick, isn't he?
Trying to get Chan to dance. Chan's got my rhythm, without a doubt.
I think you and me combined, mate, to be honest.
He's got my rhythm with one leg, but... So, and it's funny because the kidnappers then call him up and say, right, you messed me about. No, this is after this actually happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
When he raises it again, which is quite funny. But they go to the restaurant, and what they're going to do is Chris Tucker's going to go up to the and kind of face off against the baddies there, against Sang. So they see Sang go in there. Jackie Chan's going to be covered downstairs. And when Chan's downstairs, he sees one of the waitresses wearing the necklace that Soo Young gave him, which is really, really handy. It really is.
You couldn't put any more sort of plot in there, could you? It's ridiculous. Why is this random woman wearing her necklace? It's just too easy, isn't it? It's too obvious putting it in there. It's pretty poor.
On that particular night. But I didn't realise, and it was pointed out very kindly by my wife, that when Chris Tucker goes upstairs to face Sang, that I didn't think that Tucker saw... Jun Tao on the screen, because obviously Griffin's there organizing like the money drop and stuff like that, and I didn't realize he was actually seen on the CCTV. And it was only when they get to the end, because I said to my nearest and dearest that no, he just missed him, but he actually says, I recognize that guy from the restaurant.
So he does, doesn't he? Yeah, but you don't realize at the time.
No, I did not realize that. I thought he'd have missed it, but they go upstairs, and again, this kind of fight scene could have been the parlor fight scene, couldn't it? With the chairs, with the mat. And again, I'm not putting it down, because when I first watched it, it was one of the best fight scenes, probably the best fight scene in the film.
No, definitely. It's when it really started opening up to sort of the mass enemies, two guys kicking their asses. Well, it's mainly just Jackie Chan, isn't it, to be fair?
Yeah.
To poor Chris at this point, he's clearly... out of his depth.
Yeah, but it's great. You've got the, again, like in the parlor, you've got the jumping in the chair, the flipping out, the flipping the gun off the rug and off the tables, and it's really, really quick. The karate, kung fu, and the choreography is fast, and I think it works because without kind of stereotyping, it is Asian males fighting each other.
Yeah.
And the choreography, it's kind of really, really fluid. And it's good to watch. Whereas when he fights, again, like we said before many a times, the Westerners, it's just slow. It's as if they're waiting for Chan to react before they react.
Oh, definitely. But this is, you know, let's be fair. I think most of these guys have probably been cast in other martial arts films and been training to do this their entire lives. You know, most Western people have no fucking clue about martial arts, really, in comparison to them.
Apart from Chuck Norris.
Apart from Chuck, but there again, he's unique, isn't he?
Oh, there's only one.
Him and Jean-Claude, you know.
Oh, yes. Yeah, even death is frightened to say that you're dead with Chuck Norris, you know.
Oh, he's never going to die.
The man will live forever. But it's good the way they do these scenes. And obviously, it is violence, but they keep it fun as well.
Yeah.
Keep it really lighthearted. I think it must be very difficult to do a scene and not concentrate on the violence and get sucked into that and manage to keep it flowing with kind of with just one-liners in between. And that's one thing they consistently do well for all of these films.
Oh, definitely. At the end of the day, they're comedies, aren't they? They're buddy cop action comedies. You can't say they're anything else, really. And they do keep the comedy flowing throughout, even with the serious bits. It's a bit like Lethal Weapon in the sense of there's something serious, and then they use a one-liner to bring it back to you just going, oh, that's all right, you know. But they do it to a different level in the sense of it is just a pure comedy sort of thing.
Yeah, and this is when Han gets the call afterwards, the counselor, from Sang. And he says, right, you've messed me around twice. The bounty's gone up 70 million now. And he's so patient. It keeps going up. I'll give you one more chance. I'll give you one more chance.
Oh, no.
It's quite funny, because considering he's so rough and violent and murdered so many people, he is being extremely patient. And then Jun Tao, or Griffin, comes around and actually says to him, if I was you, I'd pay the bounty or the ransom in full. And it's so terrible. It's such foreshadow, which is awful.
I know. It's almost like, come on, I'm the bad guy. Just give me the money. It's fine. You know.
Yeah.
You might as well just turn around and whisper to his ear, I'm the bad guy. Just give me the money and then this will all go away.
Yeah, it's good. And Tucker seems to turn quite serious after this, because he calls Johnson. And I'm so pleased they put that one-liner in where he asks about finding out where Han's going to be later on. Yeah. He goes, no, I seriously need your help. She's really going to be in trouble. And when he turns around and says, what are you wearing?
Yeah, what pants has he got on?
All right, one other thing.
Yeah?
What color panties you got on?
It really...
I won't tell you who that reminds me of at all.
It's so, so funny. It really, it just needed that, because it was getting too serious, that scene was.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, no, again, though, it's like that, isn't it? That just brings it straight back to the comedy element of it. It's just, it's hilarious. Yeah,
thankfully. And he gets Jackie Chan off the plane. And again, the bullshit that he spins the stewardess about the plane's alternator.
Yeah. Do not let it fly. It's got a... Yeah, it's just brilliant, isn't it? It's fantastic. It's just...
And then they tell the stories about their dads being cops. And
yeah.
And they got, again, there's that further bond that they deep down, for all the failures and the jokes, that they are really good people and they are more alike than each other thought. And
yeah.
It's just so sweet and it's so lovely and sickly. But it works, and it goes to the exhibition centre at the end. It's like the grand finale. I mean, the film is only an hour and a half long.
It is.
Yeah, so it's not a long film. And again, considering they want to keep these people away and that Chan and Tucker are such a risk, they walk into this exhibition centre, past all the agents, without being stopped. And none of the waiters have been vetted for possible criminal records. It's the worst.
They're carrying Uzis, you know, like all waiters do. It's fine.
All the waiters have got bulges in their jackets, the shape of machine gun.
Yeah, it's fine. Oh, you got your standard machine gun? Excellent, right? Yeah, you can go and pour some wine. Thanks. Yeah.
There's nothing to see here. They need a distraction, and Tucker does what he does best, like he did in the casino. He's so good at causing a distraction. And this does mimic so much the second one. Not that that's a bad thing, because I do like this film, and I do like the second film. But as you said earlier, it's amazing that they kind of, the map that they follow out both of these films together. And Chan, when he sees a device from Sang giving it to Jun Tao, he realizes that he's Jun Tao. And again, there is no fighting. There's just a detonator. And he realizes that, or he tells him that the girl's outside in a van. Conveniently, he's brought the girl to the scene rather than keep her miles away, and that she's going to die. He brings her there, and Chris Tucker goes out and like rescues her, and he does that gun move that Jackie Chan's taught him, and he's so chuffed with that. I like that scene. It works.
It does, doesn't it? He's like, yep, I did it. Did it. Check me out. I did like it when he saw it was Jun Tao, and just in the middle of the exhibition, he just starts shouting and pointing right at him. Jun Tao! It's Jun Tao!
It's like, so subtle, isn't it? It really
all right, mate. Calm down.
And it's handy that the girl's got a bomb vest like strapped to her. Soo Young has, and they've brought Johnson with them who can actually disarm a bomb. But what did you think of the shootout? Because they did say at the start of it, when they're watching Han give his speech, you hear Jackie Chan saying, these artifacts in this building are so rare, I don't need to damage any of them. Obviously, you may as well look at the camera, break the fourth wall, and say, some of these are going to be damaged.
Yeah, Chris Tucker should just turn around and go, that ain't going to happen, and then gone back into the film. Yeah, definitely.
It would have been great. What did you think of the shootout they had?
I thought it was all right. It was pretty good. It was pretty good, to be fair. You know, it's... I thought the action around it was hilarious, especially with Jackie Chan trying to stop things getting broken and stuff like that. But, you know, for what it was, I thought I enjoyed this bit. There was no bit where I just turned around and go, oh, God. You know, it wasn't one of those films.
No, I completely agree. It worked really well for me, and everyone had their role to play. You had Johnson, who was disarming the bomb. I thought she was very, very good. She did a really good job, and she works well with the little girl trying to take that bomb apart, because you've seen when she's testing and practicing on bombs that they always blow up. So it was nice for her to have that kind of storyline and that arc for her to be successful under extreme pressure.
Yeah.
And the Jackie Chan following Sang. No, it's Johnson. It wasn't Johnson. God, what am I talking about? It was Jan Tao.
Yeah.
I like that. And I don't know if they were... I mean, Jackie Chan, obviously, he does his own stunts. But I can't imagine for one minute that Tom Wilkinson, for Jun Tao, was actually walking on those beams. But I can easily imagine Jackie Chan would do that just for effects.
Oh, yeah, I reckon Jackie Chan would. He's, you know... But no, I can't imagine that Tom is the type of person that's going to be doing that type of thing.
He'd be out of breath by the time he was about 10 foot off the ground, because they climb all of these iron beams. And it's really, really impressive, because it's a massive glass ceiling building. And it's all framework in white steel. And he's climbing up there. And at the top of it, which I don't really get, they're keeping all the money and they're counting the money. The FBI are at the top of the building, which is the ransom money. And Sang gets up to the top and he decides he wants to double cross and take the money for himself. And he shoots one of the FBI agents. And then Chris Tucker just shoots him. I would like to have seen a fight between these two rather than just shoot each other.
I think it goes with the fact that he was just a really weak bad guy, wasn't he? And it's a shame that there wasn't more to it. But I suppose they needed to end him. I agree. It's a shame that they couldn't have, like in the other ones where he's actually managed to have a fight with the bad guys, like the third one, for instance. Gets one over.
Yeah, I mean, the way he kills him is good. The fact that it looks like they're going to kind of duke it out. And then he's got that gun down his shoe, and he flips back and he fires the gun strapped to his leg and everything. I think that's really, really good. And that surprised me, and I didn't expect that for one minute.
Do you think that was his daddy's gun?
I'd like to think so. I think that'd be a really nice touch. I mean, if they would have said that and he would have kept it on him, and it's for good luck, and he needed that luck at that time to beat Sang, it would have been a really, really nice moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he mention that was his dad's gun?
I can't recall it, but it just, to me, as soon as he did it, I thought to myself, I bet that's his dad's gun. But there again, like I say, I could be.
You could be a sentimental old fool, couldn't you?
I always have been.
But it reaches the climax and it turns my stomach because they're so high up and I really hate heights. Where Chan's hanging onto one of the beams, you've got Jun Tao hanging on, and he's hanging on to the bomb vest because it's been taken off Su Young, and being the gentleman, being the hero he is, that Chan's now wearing it to try and get away from everyone so no one gets hurt when it explodes. And the fall, it really reminded me of a poor man's Die Hard, a Hans Gruber fall.
Pisses me off. It really does. It's such a good scene, and then you've got him shooting the gun at Chan, who's wearing the vest. And, you know, he's on the ropes and he's trying to hit him with the case full of money.
Yeah.
And you just know what's going to happen. You know, just run away. He's hanging off the side.
It's a terrible fight scene, really, isn't it?
It's awful. It is terrible. But, you are right. The fact that I mean, you can tell it's green screened or whatever it would have been, I suppose, because when he's looking down and obviously the vest rips and he falls, you can tell it's...
Do you know what I would have liked? And what, for some reason, I must have seen another film that I thought when he fell, that he fell into that water and then the bomb went off and it kind of blew up.
Mm.
For some reason, I thought that's what happened. That, and I, for me, that would have been really, really good. A bit of gore, a bit of colour in there. The water turns red.
Yeah.
But for him just to fall off like that is a bit of an anticlimax. But you're stuck. I think you kind of, in a way, snooker yourself when you get someone who is so deadly like Jackie Chan, who is so talented, who can do so much and versatile, when you put him against someone who is really old. And like it was like Stephen Rain in the last one, that he had nothing to offer and he was no threat. And this guy wasn't a threat. It would have been nice if someone in here was a threat, because the only thing that was the threat itself that he thought would die.
No, and, definitely.
But it is good the way Jackie Chan gets down, the way he slides down that massive curtain. And I can imagine him doing that stunt himself. It's really, really impressive. And it's absolutely bonkers.
I love the way he hits him in the face with his crotch as well. Well, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. It's a face full of sack, doesn't he?
I've saved your life. Thanks for saving my life. Here's my balls. Yeah.
And it kind of, that's where it ends and everything's happy. And then the two FBI agents offer Chris Tucker a job in the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so, so good. It's just a reply that you'd love to give and shove it up your ass, basically, isn't it?
Take that badge and shove it up your ass.
When you come back, there's going to be an FBI badge waiting for you.
You serious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come on, man. Don't be playing.
No.
I don't know what to say. It's like a dream come true. I got an idea. Why don't y'all take that badge and shove it up your ass?
So, so good. And really, they kind of, it starts off that Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker board a plane going back to China. And that's where the second one launches.
Yeah, roll call number two.
They must have been so confident off the back of this, like the early viewers, like the figures to see what people thought with regards to editing and what they liked and disliked. It must have got massive positive reviews.
I think so.
They'll do a second one.
Yeah, I think, like you say, although it's weak in places and stuff, there was nothing sort of really this good or like it before it in that sense. So I think it stole the audience. No one else had tapped into at that time.
No, so I think not
they
at all.
Probably were confident that they were going to make a fortune out of it.
Yeah, and when you think with a budget of, I know kind of only, but only 33 million, considering some of the things that they were making back then with the size of the budget, I mean, it's not a lot of money to lose, is it? And it wasn't that much of a gamble, I don't think.
No, probably not. It's huge. Huge, you know, Hollywood, isn't it? You know, the fact is they made it back straight away, didn't they? And then went on to make hundreds of millions of money. So, you know, I think, you know, you win some and you lose some, and they definitely caught a winner with this one. You know, that, let's be honest, the amount of films that they make that make a loss is huge, isn't it? You know, when you actually think about the dross that goes straight to DVD and stuff like that, there's plenty of them, isn't there? So,
yeah, I mean,
it's take risks.
Year really for films. I mean, just looking in 1998, wasn't it?
It was.
Armageddon, Saving Private Ryan, Something About Mary, Deep Impact, and Lethal Weapon 4, which is obviously available to listen to on our queue. So, some massive films there.
Huge.
I wonder where this film kind of ended up in the box office, as in how it rated, you know, because it obviously was a good year for blockbusters that year, as it was the 80s was. But, I mean, for me, the 80s will always be the decade of the great films.
I don't know where it would have ended up. I can't imagine it would have beaten a lot of those titles, to be honest. But, you know, I expect it would probably have been the top 10 grossing films or, you know, of that year, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, Armageddon totaled like 553 million. Saving Private Ryan was just short of 500 million.
Oh, well,
this film was 244. So, I mean, that is huge compared to those films. I mean, I should imagine the budget for Armageddon would have been absolutely phenomenal back in the day.
Oh, definitely. I can't imagine that would have been shy of a few. I mean, the amount of CGI and stuff in that film was, you know, massive, wasn't it? So
140 million estimated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was?
So Rush Hour was 33 million. So
70 million for Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, that's just
so
insane.
So that's double and a bit, isn't it? So, you know, to make that much money, considering the other ones have, you know, spent more than double that, easily more than double that, just goes to show you sort of how well it was.
Sort of and as you say, with a combination that we've not seen before, the mixture of the kind of the Western and Eastern cultures coming together, it's were good. But yeah, so that was Rush Hour. We finally done the Rush Hour franchise. I mean, what is your best film in this out of all the three of them? What order would you do it?
I'd probably still go 1, 2, 3, to be honest. The only reason being that obviously the first one is one it was brand new, and I liked the fact it was that. And they 2 was fantastic, but I didn't really like 3 at all.
Yeah.
I'd still go 1, 2, 3. And I know you're 2, 2, 3, 1, aren't you? Or are you 2, 1, 3?
I'm 2, 1, 3.
2, 1, 3, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it doesn't, because I was the only one obviously quite enjoyed 3. So
you were.
Yeah, that doesn't reflect. It doesn't think that 3 is bad, because I still enjoyed 3. But,
it is bad.
What would you give this out of 10? And what's your best bits and worst bits of this film? Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it because it is funny. I think it has aged a little bit with the comedy and stuff like that, because there's a lot of films that have done this now. So if you'd watched it at the time, it was new and sort of groundbreaking in a sort of sense, where it isn't at all now. I'd probably give it 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10, 7.5 maybe, just because it's still very good, but it has aged. Best bits, I think it's probably the fight scenes and stuff like that, and the comedy aspect of it. I think the chemistry between the two grows really quickly, and especially at the beginning where Tucker's completely mugging him off and shouting in his face, and Jackie Chan just is, you can just see him smirking. Just, it was fantastic. And I have to say, the worst bit is probably the bad guy in it, the typical English bad guy who was just crap, to be honest, and his sidekick who couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag, he just ran away from everything.
Yeah, I could pretty much echo what you've just said, everything, that the score and everything, to be honest. I'd like more of a threat for both of them.
Mm.
Just to raise the ante a little bit, and the tension towards the end. I think the chemistry, I think everything works so well. And again, the outtakes are brilliant. I
mean, definitely.
Totally recommend every film. The outtakes are so good. So yeah, I totally recommend all of these films. Even the third one, I'd recommend it to friends. I mean, it's interesting because in 2016 they did do a series of this, Rush Hour, and it only lasted one season. Funnily enough.
Funny that. Yeah.
Completely bombed. And it always makes me laugh of why they milk these things to death, you know.
I mean, it's a Hollywood trope, isn't it?
Yeah, they just leave things alone. Magnum PI, a great series. Tom Selleck.
Definitely.
Why do they need to bring a new one back? Show the old ones. That's not age for me.
But the thing is, what annoys me is the fact they try and bring it back and try and make it what it was, and you cannot do it. You cannot do it. It's they were a cult classic and brilliant for a reason. It's like, why did they make an 18 film? It's always going to be shit in comparison to the original series, because even though the program, let's be honest, was the same thing over and over again, people loved it for the characters and what it was. You make a film and ultimately it's a pile of wank.
But yeah.
They do it. They do it. They keep doing it with everything. It's almost as though they've run out of original ideas. So rather than that, they just keep saying, oh, should we remake that? Like Ghostbusters. Why would you remake Ghostbusters?
Yeah,
just be different. But it's crap.
Have you seen the new trailer, the latest one?
No. Who's that? Is that the ladies again, or is it back to? Yeah.
No, it's the very latest Ghostbusters trailer. It's got Paul Rudd in. I think it dropped in a couple of weeks ago. It's a really good trailer. I mean, I'm really excited to see what they're going to do. It's completely different to any of the other ones with regards to set in New York and stuff like that. It looks really good. I won't tell you any more. It's well worth.
I might look out for that because I love seeing the original because I was a kid during that time and I loved the Ghostbusters. You know, I had the toys, I loved the films, the cartoons, everything. I thought it was brilliant. But, you know, I'll have to look out for that.
Yeah, it's the first single I ever bought was Ray Parker Jr.'s.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was Ray Parker Jr.'s single. And, I mean, I was 10 years old. I had a record voucher. I went and dumped Rick Smith's and I bought my first record and it was Ghostbusters because I thought it was so good. I drew membership cards and we had a Ghostbusters gang at school. Mate. It was just freaking awesome.
I wish I was in your gang. That would be awesome.
You can be in my gang anytime now, I'll tell
you. I'd like to be Ray. get sucked off by a ghost.
Yeah, that was weird. when we reviewed that film, it was interesting.
I know. Oh, it's brilliant.
That in it, Jesus. But
my first record, I think, was Star Trek and Across the Universe.
Oh man, you can't take these things back, can you?
You can't.
You know what I mean? It's like if you buy a really shit record that was good at the time, you just can't take it back now. When you look back and think, fuck, I wish it was something better than that.
I can just see myself sitting there listening to that, thinking, this is fucking awesome. It's really not, it's crap, but hey, there you go.
Oh dear. Well, that was Rush Hour, and we've got the Winter Soldier. We've got a Marvel One Back episode 5 at the weekend, which both completely buzzing about what's going to happen. I've got no idea what they're going to do. Walker has taken the super serum, and there's so much hate for him on the internet. It's unbelievable.
I know. Leave him alone. It's weird. He's just a good actor. God.
Exactly. It's credit to him that people are reading like this, but there is no need for death threats towards him. It's absolute bonkers.
Idiocracy. That is moronic.
So hopefully next week we may have James back, the elusive James, and the lovely Rav as well.
And hopefully Paul soon as well. Let's hope.
Yeah, you never know.
Make an appearance.
And we're going to start the Terminator franchise. But if not, if we can't do that, then we've got a film that which we're going to do already. We've got one lined up, which is Raw Deal, isn't it?
It is. A classic Arnie film, but not one of his most better known ones. So it'll be interesting to see.
That's right. I think it's 1986, Raw Deal. Yeah. I remember the trailer for this where it says, no one gives Schwarzenegger a raw deal. Yeah, it's really, really good. I'll put it on the podcast when we put it out. So, definitely. And because we did look at films, and the film we were going to do was it The Killer Sofa?
The Killer Sofa.
Yeah.
New Zealand film.
I'll put it out on social media, and we both watched it, and it is awful.
Oh, it's the worst thing, one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I'd recommend, it's on Amazon Prime at the moment. Yeah. I'd recommend anyone who's got Amazon Prime type in The Killer Sofa, and watching the first 30 minutes where this sofa's got a face and a mouth. But it looks really cute. It really does. It looks like a toy that like the banks would give away when you open a bank account. And it follows people down the stairs and it looks around corners and it's got one of the springs comes out of his cushion and hooks people in. It's so funny. It really, really is. And it can make cookies and flowers and
I can.
It's so good.
And light little candles and leave them around.
It's so funny. Just to see. When I put it out on I'll probably put it out again on Twitter, The Killer Sofa, but the idea of it and the fact they made it and paid people to be in it is absolutely insane.
Oh, it's watch it, but just remember what it is. It is the ultimate trashy B movie rubbish. The sofa itself is hilarious when it's moving from room to room. And there's a specific scene where this guy's shagging a hat and it comes in and hits him over the head with an iron. It's just, it's You have to watch it to believe it, guys. You really do.
An old Uncle Albert in there with a beard. The worst acting goes to him. That's got to win a Razzie, I tell you.
Oh, it does.
It's so bad. When he's doing his confused face, really reminded me of Uncle Albert.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Bless him. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Bless him.
Okay, we'll cut it there. It's been a short one, as usual, but again, it's been really great fun. Neil, thank you very much again.
No, thank you, Stu. Thanks for having me, mate. It's always good fun.
No problems. And we'll be back at the weekend for the Winter Soldier. Thanks, everyone, for listening. For all the downloads, go to YouTube, The Film Reel Cast. There's a hell of a lot more on there. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.